This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard given on the 1st of January, 1960. The title of this lecture is Opening Lecture. This lecture is 58 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions.
Thank you. I either have an awfully efficient clack or you're very glad to see me. How are you?
Fine. How are you?
Oh, I'm jet happy. Actually, during the last 30 days, I have covered more space. During the last 60 days, I have out Columbus and out Magellan. Except I didn't discover very much. Terrestrially, that is. Well, I'm awfully glad you're here for this Congress. I'm very glad to have the opportunity to talk to you. Because, believe me, this is going to be Congress. I'm sorry to have to tell you that. But postulates are working lately, so I might as well postulate that one, huh? Well, you never saw quite so much happen since this happened last July. There's been a tremendous jump forward, and if you think there's ever been a technological breakthrough, you ought to look at this one. Now, you'll be glad you came to this Congress, just as I'm glad you're here so that I could tell you about this. Because we got it licked. Every once in a while I tell you this is it. Well, that's... And always before it's applied to a few of you. But you know something. I'm getting so much fun out of auditing lately, I can hardly keep my hands off cases. That's a fact. I mean, I can just hardly keep my cotton-picking hands off of them. It's requires self-control. I see somebody limping along, you know, saying, I'm clear, you know. And I say, sit down in that chair. Pick up those cans. Now. Oh, 6.5 on the tonar. Well, he says, I am this way in the morning. Usually, he says, I go down throughout the day. And then I restrain myself, keep my blast gun in its holster, and make myself agreeable and ask the proper questions. And that's one more case. Chalked up. Well, now, I'm not going to do it 2.5 billion times. That's where you come in. Now, I know that there are some good people who have come here who have never looked at Scientology before. I'm always told with some horror by an auditor who has just brought some people to a Congress that he had two people with him who had never heard of it before. And would I please be just a little less technical? And I'm always happy to be just a little bit less technical. But what was the matter with him that he didn't gin him in? But you good people that are here who have never really taken much of a look at Scientology before, why, we'll try to keep you filled in. And we'll try to take it easy on you. But that doesn't mean you don't have to do the group processing I'm going to give in these next 3 days. Because I'm going to group process you a couple of hours the next 3 days. That's all right with you. So don't feel exonerated just because you don't know anything about Scientology doesn't mean your case is untouchable. I've just been out with the untouchables. And they can be processed too. I almost said processed, you know. You know, that's probably the biggest problem we have in Scientology is keeping this word process straight. I get into the Sterling areas, you know, and it's processed. And I get over to the U.S. and it's processed, you know. And I get confused about the whole thing, so I'm not going to talk American or English. I'm just going to speak language if it's all right with you.
Okay.
Well, sir, we turned on some beautiful weather for you here. Took a little doing. Took a little pull. But we made it. I understand you even had a white Christmas in Washington, and you certainly had one up to the north, didn't you? We try to oblige. Of course, things don't run always perfectly in this universe. Not always perfectly. There are occasional little slips. You hear the grate of the cog wheels, you know, and the sort of an arcing spark over here in one of the capacitors once in a while. But just ignore it. Just ignore it. Because I assure you it's all for the best in this best of all possible universes. It's all been planned. And it was my great pleasure to process the fellow who drew up the plan for the Ice Cube and FAC 1. Did that recently. I'm having lots of adventures. He felt bad about it. The same fellow was on duty at Jerusalem when Rome decided to lay aside its policies and persecute the Christians. How's that for fate? These guys just seem to get themselves in the right spot at the right time. Well, also I've had some other adventures. Found Karl Marx, for instance. Yeah. He's sorry, too. As a matter of fact, Karl Marx gave me a signed confession. Runs briefly to the effect, to L. Ron Hubbard, I shouldn't have done it. I will do everything possible to undo it. Give me a break. Signed, Karl Marx. It's quite remarkably Karl Marx's signature, too. But anyway, there's lots been doing lately. And there's lots of road ahead. If there's ever been a point where we jumped off, this is it. You know, we jumped off in 1950, something on the order of the Christians going into the Roman arena. And those psychiatrists were very hungry lions. They're very hungry. Very hungry. Very proud lions. Beating their paws against their somewhat mangy chests. Saying, we are the bosses of this year arena. That's what they thought. And today, I hope that you will get information which will permit, in another year, a Scientologist to say, Scientology processes more psychiatrists in any given year than any other psychotherapy. That'd be fun, wouldn't it? Nice ad in the Saturday Evening Post. Yeah, that's right. But with all of the stumbling around that we have done together, we've made a lot of progress, even so. Actually, if we hadn't done all the stumbling around that we did, we wouldn't be able to kick off now onto a resolution of cases 1, 2, 3, 4. Tremendous amount of technology had to be known. A tremendous amount of this, that, and the other thing had to be dug up, exhumed, laid out. Fortunately, it didn't stay laid out. It came to life. And wherever we have erred and strayed away from the levels of perfect effectiveness, we have at least erred in good faith. And similarly, I've been the first to correct the errors. As soon as I found one come up, I'd correct it in an awful hurry. Now, some of you are under the delusion that 1960 has arrived. And I imagine some of you were traitors enough in the last 24 hours to wish people Happy New Year to take place at midnight last night. And you shouldn't have done that. You shouldn't have done that for this reason. Is New Year's begins at the end of the Congress. It always has and always will. Well, we've had 10 years here, and we've kicked off the decade in 1950, and I think perhaps when history rolls around and they begin to write down all the lies, they won't be able to avoid something. They can talk about Lutniks and Sputniks and all that sort of thing as having happened in this last decade, but there was something else happened a little more important than that. Is man got his first toehold on the path to freedom. And I think that was important to man. I think it was a lot more important to man, by the way, not blowing our own horn or anything like that. It was a lot more important than having a piece of iron go gallagagging around the moon. Because there's pieces of iron been going around the moon for a long time. Well, we've had quite a decade here, haven't we? We've been over the jumps and around the tight curves and so on. And some of us look a little bit older, but not much. Some of us may look a little older, but we feel a lot younger. I think that's definitely the case. Some of us wish we'd had more processing in this last decade. But this is a time to wipe out all the regrets. Why regret the 50s? We can find what there is to applaud in them and let the rest go by the boards. It's a rather dull decade, actually, as far as the world at large was concerned. Nothing much happened. Except us. We happened. And for 10 years, why, we've been holding the fort, driving people into apathy because we were still here. It's a very, very bad thing, I realized, to drive people down as deeply into apathy as we have driven people into apathy about this fact. But I think it's a matter of annual congratulations on the part of a great many people throughout the world that they have finally finished off Dianetics or Scientology. And they congratulate themselves to this effect, and then they wake up to a new year, and we're still here. And lately it's been dawning upon people that we're not only just here, but we're apparently multiplying at a greater rate than we should be multiplying. And that, of course, is the point that drives them into utter apathy. The only crimes that you can commit in this universe, as you know, is being there and communicating. Those are the two crimes of the universe. Did you realize that? There are only two crimes, being there and communicating. Look it over for a moment, you'll find out that the only thing the police want to know is, were you there? If you weren't there, you weren't guilty. And the other one is communicating. If you think of all the numbers of people that are guilty of crimes of omission, the tremendous numbers of people that are guilty of crimes of omission who get by with it, you know, they just go right on along the line, you know, guilty as can be, and nobody ever says a word. But if they actually said something or fired something or threw something or something like that, why, then they were guilty. So that is the crime of communicating. So being there and communicating was probably all you were ever punished for when you were a little kid. Didn't much matter what you communicated. You probably found out that if you didn't communicate anything, people overlooked it. Haven't you noticed that? That's practically the total training of a U.S. general. He's not supposed to be there, and he's not supposed to communicate, and if he does nothing, why, he'll make it. That isn't said bitterly, it's just said as a comment on a passé, decadent civilization that has fallen away from us. But wherever you see a piece of land in a map these days, you find Scientology. That's a rather interesting fact. I'll give you a demonstration of that a little bit later in this Congress, because it's worth demonstrating, very, very well worth demonstrating. We're doing very, very well. Now, of course, the United States has a slight insularity. It's an isolationism that it should have maintained, perhaps, 1914 and other times, perhaps it should have maintained this isolationism. But not having maintained it, now is not the time to maintain it. Do you follow me? I mean, having communicated, the U.S. has to follow through. The United States today has international obligations greater than that of any other nation on earth. And someday we'll find out about them. From the Sunday-Monday line to the Sunday-Monday line, all the way around the world, you see the American civilization going out as a vanguard to American activity. Last time I was in Australia, it was an English colony, English possession. It's not now. Buicks, ice cream cones, so forth. It's an American possession. It is, frankly. It's an American area. And the Australian is not unaware of this fact. Now, the last time I had correspondence with Australians was just after the last war, and they were still very resentful of all the Yanks that had been down there. So this time when I was in Australia, I said, well, you know, I'm an American, and, oh, you are? And I said, well, I know you boys were pretty well beaten in by all the troops that were here, you know, and during the war. Yeah, we sure needed them. We sure needed them. Well, this was a different tone of voice than I had been hearing before. Yeah, great people, the Americans. And then I started looking around, and I found American methodology operating their airlines and Buick cars on the roads, and American architecture, which, by the way, I didn't realize was American architecture till I got back here. You keep changing it, you know. They're right up to date. And everywhere you look in Australia, why, you see American merchandising, American stores, American the rest of it. And just recently, they lifted all of their trade barriers for America and left them in for England. And cut out, within the last 30 days, cut out American currency exchange restrictions, making probably the only area in the sterling area that is now, will inevitably go totally dollar. No, America is conquering the world and hasn't found out about it yet. It's quite remarkable. Quite remarkable. There's so much to do here in America, and there's so much doing, and there's so much activity and so on, that nobody looks around and finds out that Gregory Peck and some others have been plowing a pioneer trail. For instance, I was a judge in, it's very interesting, but East Grinstead, Sussex, doesn't quite understand why I can't vote in England. They're having a hard time understanding that. They don't believe it, you know. They think I'm kidding them or something of the sort. And I have not yet been elected as chairman of the county council. Not yet. But if I'm not careful, I will be. There are two reasons for this. One is the HCOWW's headquarters. Of course, it's a very beautiful old manor house and has to a large degree dominated the politics and so forth of the area for centuries. So it's a groove communication line. But much more interesting is the fact that an American is supposed to know all about everything. So I get drafted for the Road Safety Council. They really didn't know what they were letting themselves in for. And as soon as they drafted me for the Road Safety Council, what was the next thing they did? They made me road safety organizer. Well, he's the fellow who dreams up and executes all the programs while the rest of the committee sits there, you see. That's pretty dangerous. Old Bert Belknap, years ago, developed a test which you have today as the aptitude test. Well, that's a total swindle, that title. I'm not responsible for the swindle. Belknap is. No responsibility for that. And Belknap, with some tiny assistance from around about the place, dreamed up something that demonstrated an auto accident prone in order to turn this over to the Arizona Highway Patrol and make them test everybody in the place that came in for a driver's license. And it would show up at once the fellow that was going to have an accident. And that's your aptitude test. And the whole thing is based on just that. If you notice, it speaks of cars right in the beginning of it. Well, that aptitude test has been just been sitting there waiting to fire for years. And all of a sudden, a safety committee says, wouldn't you like to be a member? And I said, well, pardon my soul, well, rather, civic duty. And accepted, you see. And for the next few months, I can tell you in confidence, why, we'll just run a standard American safety program. Now, they put me in there because as an American, I, of course, know everything to know about road safety because America has more accidents. I know that's... So what they did was buy Americanism, but they're going to get Scientology in 6 or 8 months because I'll start persuading the traffic division to administer this aptitude test. And as soon as we've collected some statistics, we will demonstrate conclusively, you see, that if you test them before you license them, you pick out the people that are going to have an accident, and then you don't have accidents. And when we get all the figures compiled, then we will see that it gets to have the force of law in England. And then we can point out to the United States that England, the pioneer of all such things. And one fine day, while you'll have the aptitude test being administered in the United States before anybody grants a license. These things are rather devious, but we're straighter than most deviousnesses. But anyway, you would be utterly amazed at how American civilization is spreading out across the earth, and it is American civilization, and how it is less and less resented, less and less resisted. There was a time when people were saying, well, that's the way it ought to be done, you know, because that's the way we've done it here in Northern Ireland for the last begorra and begods. So that's the way it should be done. No, they wouldn't say that now. They'd say, well, unless there's an American system that has improved on this, we will do it our way. That's kind of the way it goes. Now, in this country, while we're educated to some degree to believe that Russia is doing something or is reaching someone or has something to do with the world at large, and they do have a certain philosophy that appeals to the have-nots and are quite popular in Asia, but the only reason Americanism isn't spreading into Asia is somebody dropped an iron curtain. I don't know who dropped the iron curtain, but it wasn't the Rusky. He didn't have strength enough to even drop a flat iron. But it's rather a shame that there are certain parts of Earth that aren't getting a treat of this tremendous bath of popcorn, Coca-Cola, and so on. But it's only those areas that our State Department has determined shouldn't have it. We're cause with regard to this. Now, the Russian can only confuse things, and that's his specialty, and he doesn't really have any other specialty. I hate to have to be that blunt about it. But he can go in and deprave, confuse, upset, and mess up something. And on a higher technical level, where he devotes a tremendous amount of slave labor and dedication all mixed up together and confused to some project, he can get rid of some technological wonder world thing. But his civilization is so starved today that he has to take new countries in order to feed his own country. The poor Russian is more to be pitied than censored, because you make anybody hungry enough and he's liable to do almost anything. Did you see after his visit to the United States that Khrushchev said bluntly and flatly that he would even go to the devil to arrange dollar credits, and therefore had been to the United States? Did you see that? You almost never get any European news in America because your outflow from America is so great abroad that there's hardly anything can get back over the lines. But Khrushchev wanted credit. He wanted food, and he wanted various things to try to straighten out the mishmash that communism has made out of their own civilization. And unless somebody gets knuckleheaded and keeps on talking about war and the necessities of war and how if you don't have war, you don't promote enough generals or whatever other reason they have wars for. I've studied this very carefully, and I find out that it's normally a matter of numerical order of promotion that causes war. I think that's probably the most fundamental, reasonable, logical reason why we have wars. Because, you see, they get their orders of seniority mixed up, you know. And in a war, they can expand their promotion lists. and it permits them to straighten it all out. You get the idea? I think that's about it. I looked into it. Looked into it. Of course, I'm no student of international affairs. If I were a student of international affairs, I would have been locked up a long time ago. But the American civilization today is taking Earth, and you'd never find out about it reading your newspapers in this country. You just never would find out about it. You have to be scattered around the world to take a look at this oddity. Once upon a time, why, there were various manners and customs, and about the only thing that has remained are certain things that are unmistakably French. These French things have remained, but otherwise hardly anything else is stable. The French do certain things, you know. They set tables in a certain way. Did you know that? You know, they set tables in an exact way, and they're the people that are responsible for your getting that number of spoons, knives, forks, and plates and glasses in front of your plates. I don't know if you realize that. It's a great contribution. I remember when we first trained them to do it in Paris. And they said, this will be a great contribution. They've been contributing it ever since. But aside from little oddities of that character, which Americanisms have imbibed, and aside from the fact that all the food in America is really Spanish, that's right, all American cuisine is Spanish cooking. You know, did you know that? Great oddity. Just like all American cowboy gear is Spanish. We've borrowed from various civilizations here or there, but when it all gets put together and they really want to get the show on the road, it's an Americanism. You see the difference? Well, once it's all put together, packaged, a going concern, and somebody is doing something about it, it's an Americanism. Now, you wonder why I'd spend so much time abroad. Well, you could censure me for that. You could if you wished, because it's a little bit reprehensible on my part to put in as much time outside the borders of the United States as I have put in the last 10 years. But there's a good reason for it, as you should realize, and that is, with as much arms and ammunition drifting around, as much atomic fission and other things in the offing, the ability to govern must be supported and must be spread around, and you cannot govern people unless people are governable. They've been trying to give people down in the Cameroons here for some time some independence. Have you noticed that? Every time they say independence to people in the Cameroons, they kill off another 30 or 40 natives. There's some 5,000 people have been killed in the Cameroons just trying to establish civilization in the Cameroons, because nobody ever started at a basic, which is to have somebody there to give civilization to. That's been neglected. They took people who were totally dedicated to certain tribal procedures, took those people, and said, you're free. And they said, free? Free? Free. Ah! You mean there's no police anymore? Boom! Boom! America actually has, aside from ourselves, has very little cultural message to offer the world. And we're grooving that down. Now we can spend some time on America. We're going to look around the country now and see if we can't find a proper place for a central headquarters. I haven't much hope that we will find one immediately and exactly, but that is one of the things which I have got to do here before the middle of summer. Got to find a little better locale and straighten the thing up and so forth, where that can handle a little traffic. Washington can handle quite a bit of traffic, but not nearly as much as the traffic you're going to get on the back of your neck. Now, Therefore, it's necessary that we arrange our own communication lines. You possibly think that one nation can live alone. Well, it can't. Or that one race can live alone, but it can't. Or that one person can live alone, but he can't. This sort of thing is best explained by the eight dynamics. And we look over those eight dynamics, and we start finding some things out with what we know now, not only that demonstrates the accuracy of the original plotting of the dynamics, which is only a matter of pride, but which demonstrates a very, very great workability in terms of clearing people. We've been trying to clear people on the first dynamic. And we can clear people on the first dynamic, but they're not clear on the second and third, let me tell you. And what I've arrived at this Congress with was how to clear them on the first, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, and eighth dynamics. A small contribution. Yes, it is very interesting to hit a jackpot. Did you ever walk up, you've been in Las Vegas, I'm sure, or Maryland, or some of these other gambling hells. And you have a quarter that you don't quite know what to do with, and you just feel in the mood to waste quarters, you know? And you walk over to a machine, and you say, well, that machine looks like the most losing machine in the place. I'll put my quarter in it, you know, and you throw your quarter in it, you know. And you pull the one-armed bandit's arm, and it goes all over the floor. Of course, you say, well, you're the one who expected to win, but you didn't expect to win, not if you were playing a one-armed bandit. Therefore, the surprise is very great. Well, I didn't have that much surprise in just the last few months in sorting this thing out. Not that much surprise. But it's sort of like that. There was one thing, one pair of things, which unlocked a lot of gates and doors and let a lot of theta flow around. The main thing in letting it flow around is not to be caught in the whirlpool. That's why you have to be a good auditor. But we're now not in a position where we are dependent on a national government. And that's why I've been abroad. The original plot was a very simple one. And that was to say that if people antipathetic to us as well as the best interests of the United States, and vice versa, the people who were so dedicated to vested interests of keeping everything down and keeping everything under their heels, if these people continued to be the sole source of regulation of our affairs and activities, as they would if we were only under one government, then we were limited to a marked degree, in that there were certain things we could not do and certain experiments we could not engage upon because they were illegal from a standpoint of, let us say, well, the laws of the United States. They tell you that you mustn't heal anybody, that it's against the law to heal anybody. Take California. I hate to bring it up, but take California. There are 25 diseases that you go to jail for curing in California. And I saw the original law on it, and although I read it carelessly, of course, and could be wrong, it appeared that even if a medical doctor cured them, he would be sent to jail at once. Their cancer, tuberculosis, other serious illnesses. And the curing of these things was definitely against the law. Now, I'm possibly exaggerating it. It probably said that you mustn't say you had cured them. If you cured them, you must keep it quiet, or something like that. There are probably some ramifications of it, and undoubtedly the law has been modified today to read that only the members of the I Will Arise Communist Association of Northern Sacramento was permitted to cure them or something like that. But the point is that it was illegal to do certain things in certain areas of the world. We didn't have a prayer in certain research lines. If we continued to be governed totally by a hidebound idea of certain things should be cured and certain things mustn't be cured and certain things must be looked in, mustn't be looked into, and other things mustn't be looked into, and so forth. And we were in a situation in 1952 whereby our communication lines and everything we were doing could have been cut off by the vested interests in sickness in the United States. We were in that position in 1952. Now, you can discount it. You can say, well, it wasn't as serious as Ron makes out. It didn't kill me. Something of that sort. But nevertheless, there was that danger. And the only solution which I could make workable at that time was put a communication into the United States from abroad. I knew that this itself would have an apathizing effect. That even though every single auditor in the country was thrown in the ditch, even though every publication were burned, even though everything were done to end it all in one country, it could still come in from another country. And that was a preventive measure which would inhibit the inhibition of the research, investigation, and application of the principles of the mind which we at that time were engaged upon. Now you can rate me if you want to for undue caution. But remember, I was the guy in the middle of the arena. And every time lions jumped, somehow or other, a claw hit me. Get the idea? Every time somebody started getting careless with javelins, I felt the wind of them. So whereas the individual Dianeticist might not have thought too much of this, he perhaps wasn't carrying the accumulated burden. Well, to lessen that burden, I mixed up our comm lines and made it a very, very upsetting thing to anybody attacking us to fix it up so that no agency could operate totally against us in one country and wipe us out. And that was the strategy. And I went to England and put in communication lines in England. Now, at the same time, a great deal of interest had been generated in England. The first book had been published there, even if indifferently, by a publisher. And a tremendous amount of enthusiasm was generated there. Now, all of this activity in England had gotten to a point where several organizations were at each other's throats. There were several organizations and several groups, and they were all in disagreement with one another. And it was very easy for me to get an invitation to straighten this out. And having put in an organization there, we were able then, by making it totally self-supporting, to make it a cross-action with the United States. Now, don't think that the United States' interests did not at that moment get very busy. As a matter of fact, they got extremely busy. They had the tag end of the socialist government to operate with. The last dregs of socialism and so forth were just at that moment dripping out of the veins of Great Britain. And they promptly labeled practically everybody and everything that had anything to do with Dianetics and Scientology as very evil and very bad. And we were practically blacklisted for 3 or 4 years. Eventually cleaned it up with 2 members of the House of Lords, several people in Commons, and just recently why the British government said, Hubbard, why, yes, he can have a visa as long as he likes. Yes, fine chap, you know. So we even lived that one down. But things were being booted into England to to knock out Dianetics and Scientology from the United States. Well, we finally got that straightened out. But nobody could quite make the grade. If at any moment Scientology had been wiped out in the United States, it would have still come in from England. Furthermore, if it had been wiped out in England, it could still have come in from the United States. Interesting, huh? Now, how would you like to be some vested interest that didn't like us? That would be a tough spot to be in, wouldn't it? Well, they were out-generaled. And gradually, no funds could be procured anymore to squash us. Actual funds were being procured and solicited. What's this? Somebody trying to set man free? Ha-ha! Not while we're still alive and kicking, these fellows were saying. So, the same thing, if you don't think this isn't a repetitive cycle, we've gone on and on and on to other countries, and things are straightening out here and there. Well, what do you know? At this very moment, this same thing is happening in Australia. And anybody who was with us in 1950 would do as I do every time I look at the Australian attacks on Dianetics and Scientology. You would start to laugh because it's now gotten funny. The same stories, the same lies, the same thing, just as though somebody had taken it off of a big blueprint. They're publishing the same newspaper stories, and they're telling the same lies about Hubbard, you see. They're telling the same lies about auditors. Producing the same arguments, and it's all coming out of an area in Sydney, only by this time we know what to do about that sort of thing. And we, of course, have Australia in a clamp. Not only is Australia now so connected with the United States that any time it got wiped out there, it would just come in from the United States, but would also come in from England. And if England and the United States were wiped out, it would also come into Australia from South Africa. South African organization is as large as the British organization. And other areas it could also come in on. Furthermore, we have all of a sudden dreamed up the technology to end all technologies, and that ends this sort of thing. But this type of internationalism was to pave the way against the time we would have the answers to these things. And we find ourselves now a very international organization. We are traveling along and actually aiding and abetting the American culture which is spreading out across the world. We are doing a great deal in this particular direction. But we're in an interesting position, because abroad, they have a tendency to believe, you see, that America is this smart. And that if this Scientology is part and parcel to American culture, then of course all of the mental healers and everybody in America who know anything about the mind, you see, they're naturally all Scientologists. And I never saw such a puzzled man in my life as an Army Major General, U.S. Army Major General in London, that I got full reports on, having to explain Scientology to a group of British medical doctors. Had he not done so, he would have been labeled a fraud. Now, it isn't that we're doing anything very slippery. It's just the way the world goes. It's just the way the world turns. These are the things that happen around the world. And in 10 years, we've girdled the globe. And we've done it so well, it's about time we took our source point. It's about time we finished up taking America. Because if anything were started now to finish off or stop our taking America, It's something like old infantry tactics. You had certain enfilade fire. Have you ever heard of enfilade fire? It comes in from all angles. Well, that's what would happen. I mean, we are not in any precarious position at all. Nothing could be done today to stamp out Dianetics and Scientology. Nothing. I don't think anybody could even whip up a penny in the United States to support an attack against Dianetics or Scientology. I think the Los Angeles radio stations and so forth that occasionally break loose on it, I think they're going to get in line. If you notice, within the last 24 hours, the Attorney General of the United States started preaching about cleanup radio. He's hearing me just 1 year late. Using radio licenses to clean up attacks of a scandalous nature upon worthy objects. We'll make it. There isn't any question now about making it. We can make it technologically, we can make it personally, we can make it on the various dynamics, we can make it internationally, we can make it around the world without any trouble, and we can make it in America and Oshkosh and Pumpkin Center and Washington, D.C. and New York City and other hick places. The only question is how fast? And that question depends to some degree on me, of how hard do I work? That's only to some degree. But to a very, very marked degree depends on you. How much work are you going to do about it? That's very important. I'm not trying to hang you with a tremendous responsibility. I'm not trying to say that here at this Congress, the only thing I should do is to just pound it into you that you're responsible and that you ought to do it and that I don't have anything to do anymore because I've dreamed it all up, you see, and you should get out there and pitch and you should do this and you should do that. And you look at yourself and look at your small zones of influence and you say, well, what could I possibly do, you see? I mean, and it makes you feel sort of frantic. I'm not trying to drive that home. All I'm trying to do is to invite a coordinated activity. All I'm trying to do is to help us feel our way through this immediate problem. We are facing a culture which is cultured in everything but the humanities. For instance, I was reading on a soda water bottle last night. I'm lying in bed, and I had a drink before I went to sleep. And I was looking there, sort of dazedly, just before I turned out the light, you know. It says, this soda water is made by a special formula patented by the soda water bottling company. I thought, oh my God, they've even now got a special formula for soda water. Yes, it's all taped, you see. It's all grooved. Everything is all patented. We know what carburetors should do and what this should do and how all the technology goes together and how all of the formulas should work. And we know everything except how to be civilized. And that is our small section of this problem, and that is our small contribution to this particular culture. Because Americanism flowing around the world and back and forth across America, and it's come a long way, culturally and mechanically only, would come to nothing. We would not wind up with a cultured or civilized earth just because the special formula for soda water got to South Africa. We wouldn't get any place. The only way that this planet can get anywhere now is for these communication lines, well plowed in along the mechanical lines, on mechanical subjects and so forth, if these also carried, they do, you know, to some degree carry a message of freedom, of this, of that. Americans are supposed to believe certain things and all that. All these things are perfectly good. But they would have to carry a much more concrete message, a much more definite understanding of man in order to be valuable to man at large. And in that way alone, we could avoid war. we could definitely avoid war. War couldn't exist. Now, I'm not saying that we would eventually become the government of Earth or anything stupid like this. I'm just saying that we should put on the communication lines of Earth the message that man can be civilized, can be free, and can understand himself and can get along with his fellows. And if we put the technology of how to do that on these very same communication lines, then we'd win, you'd win, man at large would win. And we would have, for a change in this downgrading universe, a win, and a big win. Now, we have an opportunity to make that win now. Actually, it's all set up. It's set up with almost great perfection right at this present moment. Later lectures, I'm going to tell you how we are already knocking off one of the principal goals of Scientology, and I'm going to show you how you're knocking it off. But right now, let me say that we've got a big opportunity here, and the reason I'm glad to be able to give you this Congress is to be able to hand along to you what I have found out and what has been put together here in just the last few months that is highly advantageous in driving this thing home. We're tremendously rich in communication lines. We're actually, our ranks are a little thin, but we're really pretty rich in people. By quality, not by numbers. And I think we can do the job. I don't think it's a very difficult job to do from here on out, as long as we make up our mind to do this job. Now, we've had a decade of work along these lines. We've had a decade of training, of codification, of know-how. If there's any know-how left to pick up, which of course there is, but if there's any know-how that we absolutely, essentially have to have just to do this job, then I at this moment don't know about it, because what we have right this minute and that I'm going to tell you about in this Congress is plenty good enough. So thank you for being here, and I'll be back shortly.